Thank you. I want to thank the organizers for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm going to be talking on some fine calculations in real-time finite temperature field theory. It's work done with collaboration with Meg Carrington and Doug Pickering in the math department, and an undergrad student did some preliminary work in this area. The outline is, first I'm going to review real-time finite temperature field theory. In particular, it starts out in the doublet or 1-2 representation. Then I'm going to move to the Keldysh representation, discuss the KMS conditions that apply, and then move to the RA representation, and then discuss the mathematical program we've developed to simplify these calculations and use it to verify some ordered entities. So finite temperature field theory, as Randy mentioned this morning, has applications in heavy ion collisions and physics of the very early universe. And Randy also discussed an application to Bose-Einstein condensation this morning. As in zero temperature field theory, you're going to start with the Feynman diagram. So for instance, something like this. We have photons and fermions. And you're going to apply some Feynman rules so you know what the vertex means, and you know what the propagator means, and you have your translation table. And then you do integrate over the loops and the momenta in the loops, and you do contour integration. So there's two formulations, as Randy mentioned this morning. The imaginary time formulation, where green functions take imaginary time arguments, and the integration contour is basically on the imaginary axis. Multiple analytic continuations are required to obtain physical results. And for higher endpoint functions, this becomes complex. It's well defined, but you have to do multiple analytic continuations, and your physical amplitudes basically are some linear combination of different analytic continuations of your imaginary amplitudes. In the real-time formalism, green functions have real-time arguments, and basically the integration contour is along the real axis. Formalism, it's straightforward to obtain physical green functions, and you have the added bonus that there's a natural generalization to non-equilibrium situations. And the real-time formalism, so I have a list of references, probably incomplete, where a lot of the stuff that I'm going to talk about was developed over the years, and this is basically a summary and a sort of a practical application of a lot of this work. So the closed time path formalism, the time integration contour has two branches. One is above the real axis, running from minus infinity to positive infinity, and one is running below the real axis, from positive infinity to minus infinity. You have a doubling of degrees of freedom. You have a general endpoint function of this form. It's basically a path-ordered expectation value, and these subscripts indicate whether the field is occurring on the upper branch or the lower branch. P indicates path ordering on the closed time path. So upper branch occurs before lower branch. And basically, the number of indices indicates the order of the green function. So I'm going to drop N because it's indicated by the number of indices. Plus, I'm going to play fast and loose with the position space, momentum space variables. And it should be clear what's intended. In this case, you have the two-point function, as Randy showed this morning. You can represent it as a matrix, and it's written in sort of the doublet or 1-2 representation. It has a G11, G12, G21, and G22 components, where G11 is a propagator for fields on the upper contour, G12 is a propagator for fields from the upper to the lower contour, etc. But most important thing, I can write it as a matrix, which is a 2x2 tensor. Now, at one time it was thought that type 1 fields were the physical fields, and the type 2 fields were ghost fields in some sense. But if you look at the G11 propagator, well, I mean, you can see the Feynman propagator in there, but basically it's not that simple. Just draw your attention to the fact that eta is plus or minus 1 for bosons and fermions respectively, so this applies to either. So in where I'm talking about here, I just sort of put phi. We can generalize this to bosons, fermions, combinations of bosons and fermions. And N of K0 is basically the thermal distribution functions for the corresponding particle. There's a comment, there's really only three independent components here, because if you look at it closely, you find that there's this relation that has to be satisfied, and a similar relation will be satisfied for all higher endpoint functions. If we look at the three-point function, it's a 2 by 2 by 2 tensor now. It has 7 independent components labeled G111, G112, etc. Oh, sorry, that somehow got left on there. And an endpoint function is now a 2 by 2 by 2 to the n tensor with 2 to the n minus 1 independent components. And now, of course, if we're going to go to Feynman rules, we're going to want to talk about vertices. So basically, I'm going to talk about truncated. So that's basically the same type of diagram with the external legs cut off. And I represent that by gamma. And basically, I get that by sort of just sort of separating out the external propagators. And 1 bar is the opposite. So 1 bar is 2, 2 bar is 1. So going from lower to upper vertices, R goes to A, or sorry, 1 goes to 2, 2 goes to 1. The main point of all this is that propagators and vertices can be represented as tensors. That's really the main point that you should get out of this. So calculating diagrams is really a tensor product of propagators and vertices. So if we have a, for example, I do a truncated two-point diagram. This is a typical type of diagram you want to do. I can express this Feynman diagram in this form. It's a two-point function, so it has two indices. It's a tensor. And I can represent all the internal mechanics in there as, you know, a tensor product of vertices and propagators. And upper and lower indices are summed over. So basically, this is just a tensor product. Calculations quickly become very complicated, because if I fix the external vertices at least, I still have to sum over each internal vertices, so I have a power of two for each internal index. So I have 6, 8. So I have 2 to the 8, two to the 10 different terms in each calculation. And for higher order, this becomes more complicated. So, but actually, most of these are actually going to vanish. And you can't really see it in this case. So what we want to do is move to the Keldysh representation using this matrix transformation written in this form by Jolie in 2002. And basically, you use this matrix, and you hit your green function with your endpoint function with a bunch of these transformation matrices on each index, and you transform into a new basis. Now, the alpha now indices become R and A, where R is sort of the first row, first column. A is second row, second column. But now, in this basics, the propagator in this basis becomes just simply this, where I can recognize the familiar, retarded, advanced, and symmetric green functions. The advantage here is there's only 2 to the n minus 1 explicit components. I knew that how many independent components there were, but now it's explicit. And basically, it generalizes for all higher endpoint functions. G to the AAA, et cetera, is equal to 0. And similarly, going to vertices, I have gamma to the RRR equals 0. So I've eliminated one of the components, which means that I have fewer terms to calculate in the Feynman diagram. The advantage number 2 or 3, if I have any product of all retarded or all advanced propagators around a closed loop, basically all the poles are going to be on the same side of the axis, and I can close the contour in other way, and all of those terms are going to vanish. So I immediately get a whole bunch of terms vanishing. And just to mention, at thermal equilibrium, you can relate the imaginary time of calculations to the real-time green functions, and everything works out. So they work the same, or they end up with the same answers. At thermal equilibrium now, there's a further condition that they have to apply. The components of the endpoint amplitudes must satisfy a set of relations called the KMS conditions. And for the two-point function, we have two KMS conditions that look like that. And the first expression simplifies to expression that some of you may have seen before, more usual representation of it, where the notation here, this n sub I, it's a simplified notation for a function of the momenta on the corresponding leg. So n1 is a function of the momenta on the first leg. And it's the function in particular it is this function of the thermal distribution function, where eta distinguishes between photons, fermions, and bosons. So the main point is, well, there's really only one independent component of this propagator. I see three, but there's really only one. If I go to three-point KMS conditions, these are the conditions that I have here. And you can see these KMS conditions were known, obviously they've been known a long time, but writing them in this way, you can definitely see a pattern that's occurring. You have two A's on the right-hand side, and you have the corresponding N functions out front. On the left-hand side, you have the unstarred three-point function with the exact opposite indices. And then the next two terms, I'm just replacing each of those R's with an A and putting in a corresponding N function. And this pattern works for all of those diagrams. And you can generalize that to higher and higher endpoint functions. Again, what this tells you is really there's not as many free independent components as it looks like at this point. And it'd be nice if we could just sort of, we could go through and look for patterns like that and simplify just to that. That's a little bit hard to do because these expressions get pretty big. So generalizing to an endpoint KMS conditions, we take the generalization of this term there. We call it C functions. And I won't go through basically how they work, but you can look. They're fairly simple. But there's a generalization of those C functions. And I can write the general expression for KMS conditions for arbitrary endpoint functions. And there's stuff in here that I haven't defined. The main point here is we have a general expression. But really, the rule of thumb is the more important in terms of looking at the indices and the subscripts of those end functions. So the main point here is, OK, there's really now only 2 to the n minus 1 minus 1 independent components. So if I could get rid of some more of them, it would simplify my calculation even more. And I just want to mention, of course, when we do the Feynman rules, we're going to be working with vertices and not endpoint functions. So the same KMS conditions apply exactly analogously, except I have to switch R and A. And again, what you want to think about at this point, what do these G sub RRAs mean, or the gamma sub super RRAs mean? They represent basically some representation of a diagram like this. This is the Feynman diagram, but I haven't said what's in the final state, what's the initial state. And basically, those different combinations of subscripts indicate different types of diagrams. So again, I really have fewer independent components than are explicit, so I want to try and get rid of some more of them. If we rotate from the Kellish basis to the RA basis using a transformation that was written in this form by Jolie in 2002, actually, I have this matrix transformation, which is a function of the thermal distribution functions. At thermal equilibrium now, you can do this in general, but I want to specify to thermal equilibrium at the point, because that's where you really see, now I've got two zeros, the diagonal terms are zero. I've got two off-diagonal components, and they're really just the same as they were before in the Kellish representation, and they depend on each other. But you tend to leave them in there. You tend to leave them in there because you want to be able to get rid of all the terms where you have the same retarded going around a loop, so that you have Cauchy integration getting rid of terms. So three-point functions now become look like this, and now again I have the diagonal terms are zero, and I have expressions for these RA terms in terms of the Kellish representation, and you might notice that these terms look familiar. They actually look like things that are occurring in here. So you might suspect at this point that the KMS conditions are going to be simpler in this basis, and plus by working in this basis, I'm automatically implementing those KMS conditions to simplify the expression that would have been harder to apply after the fact in Kellish. So it simplifies the diagrams further still. The KMS conditions are particularly simple. The two-point is just, well, GAA is equal to 0, GAR is equal to GR star, GRA star. You can write the three-point KMS conditions. And again, they're still simple. So working in this basis, I can put everything, put the KMS conditions in from the start, and not have to worry about figuring out how to simplify the expression later. You can generalize to endpoint KMS conditions, but again, I'll just skip that. You've got analogous rules for vertices. So that's what we want. The Mathematica program, basically, it takes consists of taking this. People have used these transformation matrices before, and or at least written them down, and talked about how you would rotate from one basis to another. But they've never really taken seriously the fact that Feynman diagrams are really tensor products. And tensor products, you get the higher endpoint functions, they get more complicated, but you have a straightforward set of rules that are tedious to do. That's what a computer is for, and Mathematica can do this fairly well. So the calculation is simplest when written in the RA basis. Basically, you're setting up the calculation of an arbitrary diagram just like a tensor product, and the Mathematica program that we've written, it will give you results in any of the three bases you want, in or out of equilibrium, using bare vertices or dressed vertices of arbitrary order. Can be used for QE diagrams just by putting in the appropriate thermal distribution function. And, well, I mean, at this point, I've never indicated any Lorentz or Dirac structure, but they're hidden in there. They're just suppressed. So using the program just basically consists of drawing the diagram you want to calculate, labeling the momenta appropriately, and labeling each vertex with indices, and then you enter into an input cell of the program. Well, what are the external momenta? What are the external indices? List the indices and the momenta at each vertex and at each propagator, and then you can choose among options like what basis KMS conditions are not, and then you just evaluate the entire notebook and you get the answer. In the interest of time, we checked a three-point Ward identity, but I'll just go on to the four-point. And again, this is an important comment. We know what the answer is going to be. The Ward identity is very well known. We're not going to, this isn't anything new, but it's done for demonstration purposes and as a test of the program. So basically, we calculated these diagrams in the three-point and got those results. A four-point Ward identity is more complicated. Basically, I'm taking a four-point function, well, actually, 11 different four-point functions with a specific set of indices. I'm hitting them with a momentum of a photon on the left side, and I should get on the right-hand side a difference between two three-point functions. So we calculated all 14 of these, and obviously you can't expect to read all that. It's too complicated, but we've calculated all of them. Each one, because of all the cancellations and simplifications that occur, each one is not too bad, and they break up into a bunch of different terms, and you can see there's cancellation. You've got a plus H2, a minus H2, and all of the terms that aren't gonna, that are going to be problems go away, and you're left at the end of the day with six different terms, and that you can compare with the results you get calculating these three-point diagrams, and what you get at the end of the day is you get, I have the triangle, different sign with different momenta, leaf A with different momenta. And this is leaf A, this is leaf B, and et cetera. And so basically, it simplifies the calculation, and we can prove this Ward identity. And actually, we proved this Ward identity, not just, this is just one example for a specific set of indices, but this is really proved for every possible set of indices at this point. So again, it had to be this way. This is not new or surprising, but it's a test of the program and the efficacy of it. So summary, real-time finite temperature field theory is greatly simplified with a judicious choice of basis. And we can compute amplitudes of physical process using this Mathematica program. Again, this is just setting things up and getting rid of the terms that you don't want to have to calculate anything you don't have to calculate. You still have to evaluate the integrals at the end of the day, but you only evaluate the ones that will contribute at the end of the day. It's also useful for testing relations that hold at the level of Feynman diagrams. For instance, the Ward identities, that's, you know, again, just a test. We haven't applied this, but I mean, for example, you have cutting rules, Kobes and Semenov, that apply at the level of Feynman diagrams, and you might think that you could apply this there and test things in that way. So I just want to acknowledge the support of NSERC. Thank you.